Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from Talk Sport.
Hello and welcome to the Game Day podcast from Talk Sport with me, Sam Matterface, European football expert Kevin Hatchard, and Talk Sport's Alex Crook, as Romelu Lukaku outguns the Arsenal.
He proved his value already for the squad. He was very well linked with Mason and with Kai up front, and he gives something to the game that we did not have so far. We can play very, very direct into the last line. He can hold the balls, and at the same time, he's also strong in turning. It's his constant dangerous player with a big personality that helps.
Also this week, a hatred of third kits, United's odd team selection, Jack Grealish's thighs, and Alex Crook ruffles the feathers of a few famous canaries. All nine of the weekend's games reviewed as we look back on what was a thrilling weekend and some cracking goals as well. From Talk Sport, it's the Game Day podcast.
This is Game Day.
What a weekend it was, with Chelsea going top of the table and Liverpool starting off at Anfield in front of a full crowd with a victory, and Manchester United dropping points. Alex Crook is alongside us. Have you calmed down? Because when you first spoke to me after the final whistle, you were a little bit irate, a bit sort of sweaty and combustible.
I don't know about that. I was a bit underwhelmed, really, hoping for a repeat of the first weekend of the season. It was just a bit of a stodgy performance from Manchester United. I didn't like the team selection. You'll vouch for the fact that I sent you Matic with a shocked emoji and Martial with a shocked emoji, and neither of them really did too much to prove me wrong.
That was in the friendly group chat, but privately you sent me quite sort of more aggressive messages about the team selection.
Well, they didn't prove me wrong, and I don't understand the change. Mason Greenwood has gone on record and says he wants to be the number nine, played as the number nine against Leeds, scored a goal in a 5-1 win. Why do you then move him back to the right-hand side to accommodate a striker who scored 7 goals last season?
Kev, did you have a better weekend?
I did. I had a very enjoyable weekend. Liverpool won, so I was delighted about that. One of my favourite players absolutely dominated his game, Romelu Lukaku, so that was great. I thought United were a bit one-paced at times. I was a bit disappointed that Jadon Sancho didn't sparkle in the way that I know that he can. I thought his link-up with Wan-Bissaka was, as they would call it in Germany, a construction site, something to work on, because they looked as though they weren't on the same wavelength at all.
What is that in German?
What the actual German for it.
Yeah.
So what's interesting is that when I translate these articles that I'm always looking at with Google Translate, you get these common kind of phrases come out, and construction site is one that appears in the tabloids all the time.
So it hasn't got like a literal translation.
No. It's just something that appears littered across all of these articles. So that's something that a coach needs to work on. And I think that link up, if you look at what Sancho did at Dortmund with Rafael Guerrero and before that Ashraf Hakimi, I think his link up with fullbacks is going to be really important at United.
Okay, let's crack on then as we look back at some of the great action with Kevin Hatchard, the European football expert, and everyone's favourite transfer guru.
As I understand it, that they rang Southampton at midnight on the Monday, and the deal was pretty much done the next day and announced on Wednesday.
You've got too much time on your hands. You really have.
I suppose we should ask you, actually, is there any breaking transfer news you want to tell us about?
No, pretty quiet at this moment in time, apart from Shaqiri leaving Liverpool for Lyon. I'm sure Kev will be interested in that one. But I think it will ramp up. We're only, what, 9 days shy from the window closing and still lots of clubs trying to do lots of business.
OK, let's look back at the football then.
You are listening to Talk Sport and we are at Anfield. Alexander-Arnold, lovely ball to Mane, right-footed volley under the goalkeeper, and that should seal all 3 points for Liverpool. A brilliant executed finish by Sadio Mane.
If we are good, the crowd is outstanding, and if you're not good, they try to help us to get better. And today we were good.
And it was that man on his home debut, Jack Grealish, the £100 million man. Kind of just ricochets off him and hits his shin, but falls into the back of the net. A huge cheer at the Etihad Stadium.
Cooper tees it up for Rafinha! Oh! Rafinha! Goal for Leeds United!
Danny Ings on the turn with that wonderful finish. You've got to try and see that again.
And that's why we brought him in, because of the quality of goals that he can score. That's 2-2 for him already.
Crystal Palace 0, Brentford 0. The points are shared at Selhurst Park. The best opportunities for both sides came in the first half. The woodwork coming into play twice.
Given away by Watford. And here's Mopay. Neil Mopay doubles the lead for Brighton.
It's Dele Alli with a spot kick, and he sends Jose Sa the wrong way. And after 9 minutes, it's Wolves 0, Spurs 1.
Ings is getting back to his fitness. We are talking one of the best players in the world. We are very, very lucky to have him.
Pogba got the little toe after being into the penalty area to Greenwood. Greenwood 12 yards out. It's a shot straight at the goalkeeper, and it's gone straight through him. Finished here, Southampton 1, Manchester United 1.
I love Chelsea, said Romelu Lukaku in the build-up to this game. He loves them even more now, Faker others.
He certainly does. It was written, wasn't it? It's Arsenal 0, Chelsea 1. Romelu Lukaku has put them in front.
He proved his value already for the squad. He very well linked with Mason and with Kai up front.
Arsenal 0, Chelsea 2, Romelu Lukaku and James on the score sheet. Arsenal end the day in the relegation zone, with more than one game of the season gone. For the first time since August 1992, Romelu Lukaku waited 10 years for his first Chelsea goal, but he only had to wait 15 minutes of this game with insipid Arsenal to get off the mark, and a display of ultimate centre-forward class, skill, movement and power, Kevin, that left Arsenal centre-back Pablo Mari, who looks a little bit like a Hollywood A-lister, flailing like the back end of a pantomime donkey.
Yeah, and the thing about Pablo Mari is he's a decent player. I mean, Flamengo had great success with him being the heart of their defence. And when he moved on, they found it difficult to replace him. So he's in theory, not a pushover. But I think everybody's a pushover when it comes to Romelu Lukaku, because he's so difficult to deal with physically. But now his movement is so good as well. And what we got in this game against Arsenal was prime Inter Milan Romelu Lukaku, the guy who can link up, he can drop short, he can spin a defender, he can play the ball wide, and he's a constant threat in the penalty area. And I thought this shows us why I believe Chelsea are title contenders. And they do, to me, look like the best team in England right now. I think if you look at the spell since Thomas Tuchel has taken charge, I think they've been the best Premier League team, and I think they're probably the strongest team in Europe right now.
It's early days, though, isn't it, as far as this season is concerned? I thought his hold-up play was excellent. His first touch was brilliant as well. You know, the ball was just getting popped into him. He was popping it back. His link-up play was excellent. Wonderful performance. Chelsea, 22 shots. I think Arsenal were pretty lucky that it wasn't 4 or 5, really. Chelsea were absolutely terrific. Arsenal are now competing in a different sphere, really, to Chelsea, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think anyone who was in any doubt about that won't be after watching that 90 minutes. I like Romelu Lukaku's interview afterwards. He was asked, how would you sum up your individual performance? He said, dominant. I think that probably does epitomise it. But again, Mikel Arteta, tactically, we know all about Thomas Tuchel and his use of wing-backs. I just thought they made it easy for James to bomb on down that right-hand side. Alonso on the left. I don't know what the game plan was.
Well, Mikel
from
Arteta
Arsenal.
Says Arsenal fans understand what he's trying to do. They can see it. Well, if you can't see it, then you don't want to see it, he says.
Well, I have to say, if the callers on Darren Bent's boot room on Sunday are a barometer, then probably only 10% of Arsenal fans can see what Mikel Arteta is trying to do. They're not happy with the transfer business. They believe the players that they've lavished £130 million on are not necessarily value for money. But you're right, they are competing in a different league now. They're not top four contenders. They're probably not Europa League contenders. I'm going to be bold. I don't think they finish in the top half of the table this season.
Oh, that is quite bold, isn't it, really? Because even last season, when they were terrible for the first half of the campaign, they recovered to finish in the top eight. I mean, Mikel Arteta lost his 20th game in the Premier League as a boss in this match. It was his 60th match in charge of Arsenal in the Premier League. Arsene Wenger took 116 games to lose that many. Can I ask you, Kevin, what your overall assessment of them is? Because he insists he's buying in young players for the future to coach and mould them and to develop them into greater talents later down the line. I just wonder whether or not the fans have still got all that patience, because this is a club that's been in transition since about 2006.
Yeah, you're right. And it's progressed at a glacial pace. And I think the big problem they have is that they haven't really moved the needle in terms of changing the club culture, because all of the bad habits are still there. We saw that with the rather timid and gutless performance against Brentford on the opening night. They still give away goals they shouldn't be giving away. And there just doesn't really feel like a sense of purpose, a sense of belief. I mean, you can look at it and say, well, they beat Chelsea in the FA Cup final and Frank Lampard's Chelsea were a bit all over the place. It only takes a good coach to get a group of players and really galvanise them. And I guess Arsenal fans could look at that and think a change of coach might change things. But I just think that it used to be that Chelsea against Arsenal was box office, two teams that were more or less on the same level, maybe Chelsea a bit elevated, but generally the same level. But actually now it was what it was supposed to be, really, which was Chelsea, a title contender, going to a mid-table team and winning the game comfortably. And how many of the players that Arsenal are signing for big money would Chelsea even deign to consider? I would say none.
I think that's a definite point. I mean, there's no way that Chelsea would have signed any of those players. They wouldn't have been in the market for any of them. Arsenal opening up with two defeats and no goals in the league for the first time in their history. That's in their history.
At least he's still breaking records, Arteta.
18 years. But Romelu Lukaku, seriously impressing. And you're like this, Kevin, because you're a bit like me. You're a bit of a saddo.
Oh, yes.
He posted a non-penalty XG figure of 1.41 against Arsenal this weekend, which is the highest return of any Premier League player so far this season. And also, he's only ever done that five times in 325 matches. So if you're talking about levels of performance, this is up there with his very top displays. It was a dream debut.
He was hungry as well. You could see every time the ball was in and around the penalty area, he was sniffing, hoping for a chance of goal. I think he'll win the Golden Boot. That isn't a very bold shout, but I can't see any way he won't.
Chris Wood is trying to get beyond the defender, Alexander-Arnold. Gets hold of the ball, tees it back up to McNeil, drives it left-footed, hits the post, comes back out. But it was a warning for the Liverpool backline not to switch off. Back towards the left. Now Tsimikas with a cross into the box. It's a great header by Jota. Angling it across the face of the goalkeeper and into the net. And Liverpool lead.
Jota, what a header. Clinical, no chance for Pope. Liverpool 1-0. What a great start to the game.
The noise inside Anfield is absolutely deafening.
Plays it wide brilliantly to Salah, who shoots in the far corner and scores. Left-footed, low across the goalkeeper and in, and Liverpool have a 2-0 lead.
VAR checked it, and now, after lining up to take a centre-circle kick-off, Liverpool have been told that that goal's going to be chalked off, so it's only 1-0.
He's still got 98.
Lowton, who goes past two players, produces a lovely cross, and it's touched in by Barnes, but the offside flag is up. And he tried to give a little bit to the cop behind the goal with a little raised fist.
The timing of the forwards has got to be better.
Here's Trent Alexander-Arnold. Lovely ball to Mane. Right-footed volley under the goalkeeper. And that should seal all 3 points for Liverpool. A brilliant executed finish by Sadio Mane. It's a win that is greeted with a roar of 50,000 Liverpool fans who have waited over 500 days to allow that joy to escape. It finishes Liverpool 2, Burnley 0.
Liverpool 2, Burnley 0. It was our game day feature kickoff at 12:30. Sadio Mane scoring the second of Liverpool's two goals. Diogo Jota scoring the first. I really enjoyed that first one because of the cross from Tsimikas, which came in between the two centre-halves, and Jota's movement was excellent, his glancing header beyond the goalkeeper. Burnley actually started quite well. They wanted a penalty, didn't get one. They hit a post. They caused Alisson a bit of physical grief, forced him into a couple of saves. But the first goal, as I mentioned, although it was very good movement from Jota, Kevin, no one really gets out to stop the cross. And Ben Mee, I don't think, will be particularly happy either.
No, well, he had his head in his hands afterwards, didn't he? Because he realised that he hadn't tracked the run, that he'd been leaden footed as Jota moved across him. It was a very Jota goal, actually. Always lively, always looking at what the possibilities are. Really pleased for Tsimikas. Had a great pre-season. That cross was terrific. And I think Liverpool need to know that they can give Robertson a rest, or if he's injured, they can replace him. And I think Tsimikas has... he's waited for his chance, and when it arrived, he took it. And he looked good for Olympiakos at times in European football. He's really enterprising. And it's interesting because there's a lot of talk about transfers around Liverpool. Have they made enough? Why aren't they going out and buying more players? But Jurgen Klopp, if you look at his time at Dortmund and his time at Liverpool, he's always been a believer in developing your own players. And Harvey Elliott, to me, looks ready to be a regular Premier League player, to really compete for a place in that midfield area. If they can keep Naby Keita fit, I think that's a great option for them in midfield. And Jordan Henderson, back to full fitness, looked absolutely terrific.
Yeah,
so
brilliant.
In midfield, they look great. You've got the front three operating well. Jota's there too. I think Liverpool's squad looks pretty strong to me.
I agree with you. And I was talking to Trevor Sinclair about this during the commentary. You know, that midfield area, Fabinho, James Milner, Naby Keita, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. Congratulations, by the way. Had a child this weekend with Perry from Little Mix. Jordan Henderson, Harvey Elliott. I mean, they're well-stocked, well-blessed in that area. Thiago as well. Henderson, as you say, his distribution, his control of the game was excellent. But I did feel a little bit sorry for Tsimikas again, because he is the one that they don't mind having a go at. I mean, you saw it in the first game against Norwich. Milner gave him a little slap round the chops. One or two, I think Van Dijk had a word with him as well. And Jordan Henderson ripped him apart midway through the first half.
Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with that. I think that just shows good team spirit. The fact they feel that he can tolerate that kind of in-game criticism, if you like. But I think he's done well. I guess the shame for him is that Robertson was obviously back on the bench. Jurgen Klopp is going to want to get Robertson back in the team as quickly as possible. And I think that'll be bad news for a lot of people's fantasy league sides as well, because he's a cheap option, Tsimikas, but yeah. I don't think he'll be there for much longer.
Quick transfer out, I think. But he does also possess the most unimaginative nickname of all time, and that he has now been christened Krostas Tsimikas.
I quite like that, though, to be honest.
Very good.
We don't mind a tap-in on this podcast. Liverpool have not lost any of Virgil van Dijk's 48 Premier League games at Anfield. You could see why as well. There was one brilliant intervention towards the latter part of the game. I mean, he's not up to full speed, and he's quite happy to admit that. And there was one incident in the first half where, again, someone got in behind him. But apart from that, I mean, he really was faultless.
That could be an issue, though, when it comes to next weekend against Chelsea, because he's going to be up against Lukaku. We've already talked about what a specimen that he is. So if Van Dijk is a little bit ring rusty in that game, that might just give Chelsea the edge.
Liverpool weren't happy about some of the physicality that Burnley showed. Kevin, what was your view on it? Because I think also Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has talked about the fact that we've gone from one extreme to the other in terms of the way we police the game. Did you see anything that unsettled you from Burnley? Because I think it was compared to wrestling by Jurgen Klopp at one stage.
No, I think they are what they are, Burnley. They do tread the line, but I think they're physical, they're intense. I thought they played well for big spells of the game, actually. And I thought it was only really when Liverpool got the second goal that there was any kind of measure of comfort. I always think Dwight McNeil looks a good player. I do worry about Burnley in the long term. As we said on the season preview, I just wonder how deep that squad is. Are there enough options? Are they going to score enough goals? They're always going to compete. But if they're giving away goals like the first goal, when Ben Mee just doesn't get it right and they don't react quickly enough and they don't push out to stop the cross. I think that's going to be a big problem for them.
They never look like scoring goals as well, do they? I mean, even when they get good chances, they rarely take them, and that's a real problem for them. They scored 33 goals last season. If you continue to score at that level, one under one a game, you're going to find yourself in trouble sooner rather than later. I spoke to Sean Dyche after the game, and we talked a little bit about the investment because there hasn't been too much. He says the new owners do want to invest, but it was only, he said that only after basically saying that no one's invested in the playing talent for a long time, and he sort of checked himself to make sure that he was sending the right message. But they haven't, have they? I mean, they hardly invest in the talent that they're going to need, I think, because there's a lot of teams down the bottom of that table. I mean, Southampton weren't very well stocked in terms of numbers going into the season, but actually, even they look as if they've got a little bit more about them than Burnley, especially going forward.
Yeah, that's the big problem, isn't it? You've mentioned about Burnley's lack of goals last season, and they did actually have some chances against Liverpool and didn't take them. Mm. The fact they lined up 1-11, while it's to be applauded, almost suggests they've only got a minimum number of players in that squad.
It's the first time that's happened in 23 years, yeah, can you believe
that's
it?
That's a great stat. But listen, as I said earlier, the window is still open. I think they are one of the teams who are in dire need of reinforcements, but they're not going to be big money signings. They're going to be people like Aaron Lennon on a free transfer, maybe loans from other top-end Premier League clubs. So I think it's going to be a very difficult season for Burnley.
Far be it for me to chastise Jurgen Klopp, but I think it is worth pointing out that Burnley record a foul every 9 minutes and 16 seconds. That was last season's stats. And 7 clubs committed more fouls than Burnley over the course of last season. And it's actually 95 games, which is a Premier League record, since they last received a red card.
That shows they're quite intelligent in the way that they bring people down. Tactical fouls.
Wolves 0, Spurs 1. Dele Alli with the decisive goal, a penalty. But was it a penalty? He scored his first Premier League goal in 18 months to secure all 3 points for Nuno Espirito Santo. But you know, A, it was a very one-sided match in that Wolves dominated it. B, notable for Harry Kane's brief cameo. A quick word on that penalty. Did you think it was a penalty, Kevin?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's enough there. And I think I've been very impressed just on Dele Alli, very impressed with his work rate and attitude in the first couple of games under Nuno.
He's always been like
role.
That, Kevin, hasn't he? Ask Jose.
Yeah, but I think even more so. I think it's maybe that the work rate is being used in a more effective way, I think, because he's a bit deeper. He knows he's got that security behind him. I think Spurs should have given away a penalty as well, by the way. I thought the challenge by Skip was probably a penalty for
on
me.
On Semedo.
I thought there was enough there. I think it's a bit clumsy. I would have given that, I think. But I thought Alli played well, and I quite like the compactness of Spurs. Thought they were ever so good against Manchester City after the initial 15-minute spell. And I think that it's a really encouraging start. Bergwijn looks good to me. I think he's looked really good on the counter at times, skipping past people and breaking open space. So I think it's definitely something to build on. Yeah. I think they missed a trick, by the way, in that first leg of the Conference League. I know they might turn it around against Paços de Ferreira. They may well do. But I thought to play that inexperienced a team was a bit of a mistake, I thought.
Yeah, well, I mean, this performance was more like a Jose Mourinho away performance, a bit like last week was on the counter-attack, soaking up pressure. Wolverhampton Wanderers had more shots than a student at Freshers Week, but in Adama Traore, they have a player who has almost everything. And when I say almost everything, I mean he's got almost everything apart from the ability to score a goal. 2 goals from his last 50 shots. That's not enough.
No, and again, Darren Ambrose always makes the point about Aaron Wan-Bissaka at Manchester United that he should be working harder on the training ground to improve the attacking aspect of his game. We know what a good defender he is, but his numbers going forward are not great. The same for Traore. Obviously spends a lot of time in the gym. He's got fantastic physicality about him. He's got that pace that takes him past players. But if you can't finish and you can't provide end product, that is a problem. I think he had a little purple patch a couple of seasons ago when it seemed like the penny was dropping and the numbers were improving. But certainly since last season and into this, he's gone backwards. And it's a big problem because he's a tremendous asset. But at the moment, they're not getting the best out of him. But just to go back to the point that Kev was making about Tottenham, I agree in some ways that they've made progress. But I also agree with you, Sam. It is a very Jose Mourinho style of play. But that's what you get from Nuno Espirito Santo. His last season at Wolves wasn't particularly attractive football. So I think Tottenham fans are going to have to get used to this.
He's 25 now, Adama Traore. Can you improve significantly at 25? How do you improve your end product at that age?
Well, Vardy did, didn't he? If you look at Jamie Vardy, where was he playing at the age of 25?
Yeah, he was playing in a different league, but he was always scoring goals. He's never stopped scoring goals. I mean, he's developed in terms of the quality of opposition that he's faced has gone up. But, I mean, this is a guy who regularly gets into advanced positions but can't find a cross or a finish. And that really is the game, you know? It's all right being able to run with the ball and being quite sort of eye-catching when you pick it up midway inside your own half, take on three players. But if you don't stick it in the top corner or release the ball when you're supposed to a player in a better position, then really you're only doing 70% of the job.
And the last 30% problem for him.
The last 30% is the most important bit.
I do think it's a big problem for him. I think, you know, he's one of those guys that data people love in the sense that they'll look at, you know, dribbles, progressive carries, all of that stuff. And look, he makes a tangible impact. He does in terms of making space for others, yeah, tiring people out.
Drags
but
you
there
the
does
pitch.
Come a point where you just think, OK, if we're going to have him in the team, that's what we have him in the team for. I don't doubt that he works on finishing. It would be negligent if he doesn't. He must do on the training ground. I'm sure he does. He seems like a dedicated pro, seems like a very nice man. I'm sure he does all of that work. But there does come a point where you think he just hasn't got it in terms of he's not going to bang in, you know, 10 or 15 goals. And you just accept that and have him in the team for all the good things he does do and hope that you have other guys like Jimenez, of course, who will step up and get you the goals.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Southampton 1, Manchester United 1. Well, I mean, the first goal has gone down as a Fred-owned goal, but Shea Adams deserves a lot of credit for it. Mason Greenwood scoring the equaliser. Manchester United failed to live up to their billing, really, as they dropped 2 points away from home at Southampton. You obviously weren't happy with the team selection. You've already mentioned the fact that Anthony Martial was given the role of the number nine ahead of Mason Greenwood. And clearly, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer decided that that wasn't working for him because within sort of 10 minutes of the second half, he called for Jadon Sancho and moved Greenwood through the middle. That did have an impact. They did get back on level terms just before they made that switch. But even Sancho, when he came on, didn't particularly set the world alight.
No, he looked a bit lost, to be honest. But you said that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer realised his mistake. I was commentating the game with Paul Parker and we both realised the mistake when the team sheets were handed in. We couldn't believe that Anthony Martial was leading the line and that Matic was into midfield. I know he explained the Matic decision by saying McTominay wasn't quite fully fit. And again, it illustrates the fact United need a proper holding midfielder.
He's been carrying an injury though, McTominay, throughout pre-season.
Yeah, but they need someone like Yves Bissouma, who I watched play and would come onto it for Brighton on Saturday night. Exceptional talent who would improve that Manchester United team no end. As I mentioned at the top of the programme, it was a stodgy performance, the like of which we saw a lot away from home last season. Go behind, come back, rescue some points. And it is a club record, and it is a top flight record equaling result, 27 away games unbeaten, matching what Arsenal did in 2004. But it didn't feel like that. It felt very much like 2 points dropped. Having said that, I'll give Southampton an awful lot of credit. They showed good character because when United got back to 1-1, I think most of us expected they would go on and win the game. But Southampton went again. Livramento could be one of the young stars of the season. He was sensational both when he was deployed at right back and when they moved into a more advanced position when Theo Walcott went off at half time. Adams and Armstrong seemed to be forming a decent partnership, although Armstrong should have scored, but he went through one-on-one. So I think, given the upheaval, Southampton could be really happy with that result.
Well, you say he should have scored when he went through one-on-one. Kevin, he should have actually scored a great chance when he was in front of an open goal 2 yards out and somehow sent it back across the face of goal. I mean, that was the chance to win it right there.
Yeah, it was. And Ralf Hasenhüttl talked about that afterwards, didn't he? Felt that they maybe had more chances than United to win it. And I thought he telegraphed the finish for the other chance as well that De Gea saved. It was a great save, but you knew what Armstrong was going to do before he hit the shot. What I did love was the flick from him in the build-up to the goal. I thought that was a terrific little touch and shows his confidence and shows he feels he's willing to compete at this level. What I'm really interested in is Crookie's reaction to the United team, because we are saying this season, or I'm certainly saying, that Manchester United, given the money they've spent on that squad, given the time Solskjaer has had, and we keep hearing about how they're progressing and they're getting better all the time and all of this, they have to be title contenders. Now, you put them up against Chelsea.
Yeah.
And I feel like there are fewer players in the Chelsea squad that you would put in a starting 11 and fans of that club would go, oh, no, not him. It shouldn't be him. It should be him. And I feel like there are more of those question marks over United. Mm. So they have some world-class players. Absolutely no question about that. They've signed Varane. I think Sancho will be terrific. It obviously might take a bit of time, but I think he will be. They have Bruno Fernandes, who looks sharp already. Pogba, who's been magnificent for months for club and country. But there are players in that squad that feel like a bit of a drop-off. And Martial is one of those, because I just don't get it with him. I just don't think he's at the level of a title contender.
And that is a serious problem. And I think it's a problem that they need to rectify, but they won't rectify in this transfer window because there's no chance of them getting a big name number nine. I think they'll try and go all in for Erling Braut Haaland next summer. Whether that happens or not is a different matter, of course. Tino Livramento, mentioned by Crook, brilliant again. 6 interceptions, the most in the league by any player since December 2012. When you and I discovered that he was going to Southampton, I said to you he's going to be some player. I don't think we, either of us, expected him to make such an impact. His 2 performances so far, he's probably been one of Southampton's best players.
Yeah, and in fairness to the powers that be at St Mary's, they were very excited when he signed. I mentioned before, they said he was their most important signing since Virgil van Dijk, which is a massive claim for an 18-year-old who'd never played in the Premier League before, but certainly doesn't lack confidence. He's got bags of ability, he's quick, he's good on the ball, he's got a good tactical brain. So I think he will be one of the shining lights. And, you know, maybe Southampton might just surprise some of the doubters. That's a definite point in the right direction today.
Okay, so let's talk about what Manchester United need in the middle of the park. Was he on show in the game at the Amex Stadium, where Brighton beat Watford by 2-0 live on TalkSport on Saturday at 5:30? Yves Bissouma was absolutely brilliant in that game. Before I ask you whether or not you think he will end up going to Manchester United, let me ask Kevin whether or not you think Yves Bissouma will be a better option in the long term than Camavinga, who's also been linked in that position for Manchester United?
Oh, that's a tremendous question, actually. I like both of them a lot. I think in the fullness of time, maybe Camavinga has a higher ceiling, but you're going off, you know, that's a guess.
He's still 18, isn't he? He's a very young player.
Yeah, I mean, I've been hugely impressed with Camavinga at Rennes. I do think there's a huge talent there. But I really like Bissouma as well. And I think he is somebody that feels like he has the personality to deal with a big club like Manchester United. He's got power. He's got the desire to go and break up play. He can press. He can make things happen. He can pass well. I really like him. I think he's a really good all-round player. Camavinga, incidentally, is being linked with Paris. So he could be the latest to the Harlem Globetrotters. So there's another one.
They surely haven't got any room on the roster, have they?
Oh, they'll make some. They'll make some. If they could bring in a top young French international that everybody wants, they would absolutely love that. And they've probably still got room in the budget to do that. But yeah, I think if United did turn to Bissouma, he'd make a big difference.
Don't take mine and Kev's word for it when it comes to Bissouma. Tom Cleverley, former Manchester United player, of course, was waxing lyrical to his Watford teammates after that game on Saturday. Said he can't remember the last time he came up against a player that good.
So it should be Bissouma then, and he was a big part of the victory that Brighton inflicted on Watford over the weekend. Duffy and Maupay on the score sheet. Look, Brighton comfortably better than Watford in this game, and it's their best ever start to a season.
Yep, first time in top flight history they've won both of their first two matches, and they were good value, particularly in the first half. Watford started slowly, never really recovered. Terrific header from Shane Duffy, who this time last year looked like he didn't have a future at the club, to get them on their way. And that high pressing from Bissouma forcing the mistake for the second, really well taken by Maupay actually, which isn't always the case. Second half, Watford improved. I was largely disappointed with them. I was expecting more from Ismail Assar and Dennis in particular. But Brighton kept them quiet and continued defensively where they left off last season. Really strong at the back, even without Ben White. And what I liked is they've got three centre-backs now who just love the art of defending. Dunk, Duffy and Webster. First and foremost, they want to keep the ball out of their own net. And maybe that's a bit of a throwback in the modern game.
Kev, Crookie says they started slowly, Watford. They managed two touches from the kickoff before giving the ball away. What does that tell you?
Yeah, I mean, it was a really strong performance from Brighton, but they were kind of given the license to bring the ball out from the back in the way that they want to. There wasn't enough pressure on the centre-backs. But I think what's interesting about Brighton is the pendulum has swung completely from one end to the other. And what I mean by that is last season, all we talked about was the fact that they made tons of chances and didn't put them away. They were so far below their XG type, level that they should have been at. And I think they've got the first four goals they've scored this season have come from the first seven shots. So remarkable swing. And whether that's a correction from last season, we'll see. I still worry about whether they're going to score enough goals, but if they can hang on to Bissouma, who's so important to them in that midfield area, they've got a chance of being comfortably safe, I think, this time around, rather than it being a bit dicey for quite a lot of last season.
And we know that the transfer guru always likes a bold prediction, but my bold prediction this year is that Brighton finish in the top 10.
Yeah, I agree. I said as much on the boot room. Darren Bent wanted a list of teams that would finish ahead of Arsenal and knock them into the bottom half, and Brighton were one of them. And I do think they will keep Bissouma. I think that's too complicated a deal now to get done between now and the end of the window, but it wouldn't surprise me next summer if he was to move on.
Okay. Maupay scoring twice in 2 weeks is important for them as well, isn't it? When we talk so much about the fact that they're always underperforming on their expected goals.
Yeah, the issue was he went off at half-time with a shoulder problem, didn't come back out for the second half, and Graham Potter wasn't completely sure when I spoke to him how long he could be sidelined for. I know they've got the buffer of an international break, but with Danny Welbeck already injured, Aaron Connolly not good enough for me. They need Maupay back as soon as possible.
The first whistle's been blown by Darren England, and we're off and running at Ellen Road on TalkSport 2. Cross to the far post, Calvert-Lewin, held by Cooper? Well, the referee says no. He's going to go and have a look.
I will be amazed if he doesn't give this as a penalty. I will be amazed.
And he's done the VAR sign. It is a penalty to Everton. Calvert-Lewin waits for the whistle, which is blown, steps up and fires it into the bottom corner. Emphatic finish from Dominic Calvert-Lewin.
Absolutely no charge. Brilliant penalty from Calvert-Lewin.
Brilliantly collected by Bamford. Flicks it inside. Matthias Klink! Leeds United 1, Everton 1.
Dan, to be fair, it's no more than Leeds deserve.
Jamari Gray inside the area, angles tight, drives it in. What a goal, Jamari Gray.
Excellent finish from Jamari Gray with his left foot.
Drops to the far post, Cooper tees it up for Rafinha.
Strike from Rafinha.
Phillips, ball into the box. Bamford can't get away from Mina. Drops for Harrison at the edge of the box. Bamford tries to slide it home from close range. It's only half cleared. And the referee blows the full-time whistle. What a game. Loved every second of it. It's finished. Leeds United 2, Everton 2.
Great game. Absolutely brilliant. Thoroughly entertaining. It was end-to-end. Leeds coming back from two deficits. They were 1-0 down, then 2-1 down, and still managed to get a point from the game. Rafinha coming up with his customary goal against Everton, as he always seems to do. I think that's 3-3 against them now. Darren England gave a penalty after consulting the monitor. Cooper on Dominic Calvert-Lewin. I thought that was a very good use, Kevin, of VAR.
Yeah, I'd agree. You know, Cooper was claiming that he was being held initially, but I think it is a foul. I think he drags him down. And that's how VAR is supposed to work. You know, the video assistant looks at it, says, look, I think you've missed something. You take another look and then you give the correct decision. And we see that in Germany a lot. They use the monitors really, really well. And I think that's the correct use of the technology. I thought this was a terrific game. I think it's really interesting when people talk about Rafa Benitez. I think sometimes they think he's quite defensive. He's always talking about the team shape. He's talking about being compact and what have you. But when his teams are working efficiently and working well, they play some great attacking football. And I think we've seen that already with Everton. They have some terrific forward players. I'm a big fan of Richarlison. I think he's a terrific footballer who is constantly looking to make things happen. Calvert-Lewin has made a really good start to the season. I find Damari Gray just a really curious, fascinating player because he scored a superb goal in this game. Went to Bayer Leverkusen in the winter window last season. Started superbly and then just disappeared off the face of the earth, and they just didn't use him in the closing weeks of the season. And I felt that was really confusing. And I think he just needs a run in a team. He needs a coach that believes in him, and he needs to find some consistency. We talked about Adama Traore not being able to score those goals in volume. I wonder if Damari Gray has that same problem with consistency, whether he'll ever be able to be a player that can deliver on a regular basis.
Well, like you say, he started off really well at Everton too. They'll be hoping that he remains consistent in doing what seems to be his first job, which is get the ball. And his first thought must be, where's Dom? Because he is crossing the ball into the box looking for Dominic Calvert-Lewin. You can see the game plan from Rafa Benitez. He says, look, we're right at the beginning of the process. We've only just started working with these players 6 or 7 weeks. But ultimately, you can already see the patterns that he's trying to develop.
Yeah, and I think they already look like a more cohesive unit, perhaps, than they did under Carlo Ancelotti. So Rafa deserves a lot of credit for that. You predicted, to be fair, Sam, it would be one of the games of the weekend. It has certainly turned out that way. An exquisite goal from Rafinha in particular. Two teams who want to play the right way and two teams who should be pushing for at least a top half finish this season.
First top flight full house at Elland Road since May 2004. And look, I thought they were treated to some terrific goals. I think the Click goal was a good goal. I thought the Rafinha goal was a belter. And the Gray goal was terrific as well. Look, the Dominic Calvert-Lewin penalty was obviously from the spot, so it won't get any headlines, but it was really well taken by the England and Everton forward. Bielsa believes that more lenient refereeing could benefit his side this season, but they are a team that, you know, always keep going right to the very end, but do give opposition chances. We spoke last week on the pod about the plan B, the alternate option, but it looks as if they're still going to play in the same fashion. And if that's the case, it could be a roller coaster ride. Last year, they probably overcorrected in terms of they were winning more matches than they maybe deserved to. This year, if they go the other way, they could end up sort of bottom half of the table.
It's really difficult because Bielsa is what he is. You know, his philosophy yields incredible football, you know, great goals and attacking play, but they are wide open. And against the teams that haven't got the quality to take advantage of those spaces, you can get away with it. But against the big teams, you're always going to find it difficult. And I think they will have a few more hidings like the one that they had against Manchester United. I think that's just the way it will go. I can't see Bielsa making massive changes to the way they play. And it puts so much pressure on individual defenders to try and kind of compensate for how open they are.
Manchester City beat Norwich by 5-0. Another team that are going to struggle defensively this season. They were absolutely abysmal, naive, Daniel Farker said straight afterwards, it was frustrating that we conceded four of the same goals. Well, I'm afraid they've been doing this ever since they've been in the Premier League. The first time they were in the Premier League under Daniel Farker, the same thing happened. Their marking is absolutely atrocious and they just look disjointed at the back. Grant Hanley couldn't get in the Newcastle team when they were in the Championship. And Ben Gibson, let's be completely honest, apart from a brief call up to the England setup after a couple of good spells with Middlesbrough, has never really done it in the Premier League. And that defensive central pairing, I know they've had injuries and I know they've had problems with COVID, but ultimately that defence does not look good enough, and Manchester City didn't have to be at their very best in order to rip them apart.
No, and that's an ominous sign for Norwich. It's interesting you mentioned them, because I made some comments on the Boot Room on Sunday that our friend Brian Gunn has taken issue with. I suggested that in some ways Norwich have been cheating the system by coming into the Premier League, not really making too much of an attempt to stay there, going back down again, getting the parachute money, coming back up. And I think it's going to be the case again.
Well, there's nothing like you to go over the top and, you know, just like, go to the next extreme. But I do agree with you in a certain regard, because they have this philosophy at Norwich, Kevin, where they're happy to be what they call a top 26 club, meaning that they're happy to be challenging for promotion from the Championship or in the Premier League. I think that gives the team, the club, the management, the board, psychologically, a get out.
Yeah.
It's a very German approach, actually. And Stuart Webber pays a lot of heed to the German market and the way Germany do things. And of course, he has a German coach. There are, I remember when Paderborn came up recently in the Bundesliga a few seasons ago, and they said the same. They said they wanted to be a top 30 club. So they wanted to be, you know, top 12 in the second division or higher. And I think you're right. I think what that does is it does communicate a certain lack of intensity throughout the club. But, you know, they do want to compete. They do want to do well. But where I disagree with Crookie slightly is that I do think it's laudable not to want to bankrupt yourselves. I think you have to go, you go one way or the other,
Kevin,
sometimes.
Because they've already done that. You know, it's not like they've had some sort of like holistic evolution and become this club that has got themselves into the Premier League because of the way they've managed their finances. They went bankrupt the first time and thought, oh, we probably better not do that again.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there is something to be said for learning from your mistakes. However, I think the players they've signed are a concern to me. So,
they're players they've signed. They're preparing already for life in the Championship with the signings they've made.
But I just think if you look at the guys they've brought in, so there's a couple of guys who I know very well, Josh Sargent and Milot Rashica. Well, they've just gone down with Werder Bremen. And Rashica went missing for a big chunk of that season when they went down. And so you're then asking them to show. I mean, Josh Sargent, there's no problem with his work rate. There's no problem with his effort. Seems to be a good teammate. No problem in that regard. But he's just not going to score goals in the Premier League. And so that's a concern. But I think the biggest worry for them, Daniel Farker did this big interview ahead of the new season when he said, I'm not as worried about us defensively because we were much more stable in the Championship, and I believe we will be a lot stronger defensively in the Premier League. Well, they were hopeless, hopeless against Manchester City. No communication. He's right about conceding the same goal four times. Massive spaces in the kind of inside left and inside right channels, and it was feeble, really. And Tim Krul got no support whatsoever, and they do look short of quality. We can't really judge it against Liverpool and Manchester City because they'll smash a lot of teams, but they do seem to have a soft centre.
And not just the goalkeeper, who's now conceded 30 goals in seven visits to Manchester City with Norwich and Newcastle United. Maybe they should have put Angus Gunn in goal. That's what they signed him for.
Yeah. One of the things that Brian Gunn has said is that I always talk rubbish, like I did when I said that Angus Gunn was up for sale. Where is he now? Is he still at Southampton or is he warming the Norwich bench, I wonder?
He'll come back for you.
I'm just about to send it to him.
All right.
Don't worry about that.
A couple of good things for Manchester City. I thought the Mahrez, the way he kills the ball from Diaz to score the fifth goal, swiped it beautifully past Krul. Jesus was in terrific form. Man of the match, three assists, could have had four if one of the other goals wasn't chalked off. And Grealish getting his first goal. I mean, look, if you're going to design your first goal for your club on your home debut, I mean, that probably wouldn't be how you would design it. But he has got quite sizable thighs, so you might as well use them.
It was a fine finish in that regard, in a way. You know, I think he'll just be happy to be on the score sheet. Obviously, when you visualise moments in games ahead of playing those games, as many of the top athletes do, you don't really visualise the ball cannoning off you for your opening goal. But I thought he played well. I thought he actually played quite well against Tottenham, actually. You know, always trying to make something happen, always trying to run at Spurs, but they just played very well on the day. I thought Gabriel Jesus was really interesting. And I think the general direction of travel with him is that Pep's talking about him more as a winger. And I think we're going to see him in wide areas more and more and more, whereas Ferran Torres, who came primarily as a winger who could play through the middle, I think you're actually going to see Torres play more as a nine and Gabriel Jesus as a wide player. And I think Jesus has got that capability. He's done it in the Champions League. I remember him catching Real Madrid off guard by playing in that position, I think at the Bernabeu. So, you know, he's got that
ability. That was a terrific performance, that was. I remember doing that game. It was in the Champions League quarterfinals. He was absolutely superb. Or was it last 16? Either way, it was a brilliant performance. Of course, Ferran Torres is only going to play as the nine or force nine until Harry Kane turns up. After that, he'll have to think about doing something else. Aston Villa against Newcastle. Aston Villa beat Newcastle by 2-0. Has Brian Gunn come back to you yet?
I'm just blocking him, actually.
Are you? All right, okay. We'll follow this.
I never thought I would have to block a Premier League goalkeeper, a former Premier League goalkeeper.
Was he?
He was used to doing all the blocking when he played, wasn't he?
First division, wasn't he?
No, he played in that Norwich side that finished third in the first season of the Premier League.
That was a long time
back when they used to be ambitious and try and win games in the top flight.
Stop it. Don't carry on your feuds. This is going to be a nightmare.
Crook.
Don't drag us into it. By the way, Brian, thought you were a terrific goalkeeper. And this feud that you have with Crook is nothing to do with me and Kevin. We love you. Even if
these tall men always fighting each other is terrible.
Bit of a disappointment. Aston Villa 2, Newcastle 0. El Ghazi took the penalty, which really upset me because I had Danny Ings in my fantasy team and I thought he was going to get a second
penalty.
I was so irritated by that.
Top scorer.
And then I was, oh no. Then I looked at El Ghazi's penalty record, 6 out of 6. So therefore, you thought you can't really argue with that. But it was a comfortable win, wasn't it, really? But I was a little bit uncomfortable with Newcastle's black kit.
I liked it.
I thought that was okay.
No, I'm not having it. I'll tell you why I'm not having it, right? Black kits are for referees, for a start. Secondly, why do you need to have a third kit? And if you have going to wear a third kit, why do they have to wear it against Aston Villa? There was no need for them to wear their away kit. They could have just wore their home kit. And the same thing down at, I was watching another game, Burnley. Why did they have to wear their white away kit when they played Liverpool? Last year they didn't.
I don't think that was the most alarming thing for me about the Newcastle performance. It was the miss from Callum Wilson, which again cost me fantasy points and was actually a big game changer. And the fact that Steve Bruce reverted the type a bit. It was a very defensive approach and Newcastle fans not happy. 2 defeats out of 2 already looks like a long season. I actually thought the kit was one of the positives to come out of the afternoon.
To be fair, I was just trying to stop giving Steve Bruce and Newcastle so much stick. The penalty, Lascelles very close to him, but his arm's out to his left hand side. He's got no choice on that. And I do also think that Aston Villa have really benefited from this set piece coach that they've employed. I know they've had a bit of a change up in terms of the coaching staff, and I think you can see that. I know that last week he was absolutely furious with the way that they played. This week, I think a lot happier, even though it wasn't perfect. But it was from one of those set pieces that Danny Ings scores arguably what is already a goal of the season contender, Kevin.
Yeah, and it was a long throw, wasn't it? And it's really interesting because that seems to have made a bit of a comeback at the early part of this season. So in Germany, for example, Wolfsburg have scored a winning goal on match day 1 and 2, both games that I've done, where they've scored from a long throw, effectively. And this was the same. And the way he finds space, Danny Ings, is the key to the whole thing. He's so clever at that. He just has a look round. He's always on his toes, takes a step back, gets himself a pocket of space. And as soon as that drops to him, perfectly executed bicycle kick, gets the velocity on the ball. It's not a shank or a scuff. He hits it so sweetly. It's a lovely, lovely goal. I felt that he was a great each way bet to be top scorer at the start of the season, and I still believe that. I think he will get lots and lots of goals in an attack minded Villa team. I still think they've got gears they can go up, but they were comfortably good enough over the 90 minutes. But I agree with Crookie. I think if Callum Wilson scores that goal, totally different game.
At least the third kit had a badge on it. I mean, that was important.
Yes.
Because some of them
haven't. Don't get me started on that. We haven't got long enough for me to get started on that.
That was terrible, wasn't it? The Fenerbahce kit that hasn't got a badge. The Manchester City third kit that hasn't got a badge.
Oh, that's awful as well.
Man City on the
front. But they're all the same.
They're all the
same.
It's
about 10 different kits that are all the same.
It's like a factory of bad kits.
The Tottenham kit wasn't great either away at Wolves, was it? It looked like my 20-month-old had just got a paints out and just chucked it over the shirt.
Yeah, apparently it's really popular. It's one of the fastest selling shirts this year.
What do I know?
It's modern art, Alex. Modern art.
I think it's rubbish, but you know, I don't have to wear it. Crystal Palace against Brentford finished 0-0. I've got absolutely nothing to say about this. It's going to be a long season for Crystal Palace, isn't it?
Yeah, because they've got the same problem, and we've mentioned this before, that they don't score any goals and they're too reliant on Wilfried Zaha. As far as I know, there are no plans to recruit a striker. I think they're trying to get Will Hughes. Doesn't really add that.
They've got loads of midfielders.
Exactly.
They don't need midfielders. They need a focal point.
Doesn't really add what they need. Yeah. I think Brentford were unlucky not to win the game. Ivan Toney missed a couple of opportunities.
You spoke to him
on
Sunday night.
Away.
What did he say about that?
He said that people needed to be patient. And I said, well, not too patient, Ivan, because you're in my fantasy team. And he promised he'd score at Aston Villa next weekend. I think he will get goals. The good thing is that he's missed two chances. It suggests that Brentford are already creating opportunities in the top flight. I think they found the step up relatively seamless so far.
They're not considered a goal yet as well, which is really good, isn't it, Kevin? Because that's the bedrock to which will keep you in the Premier League, actually. He's not conceding loads of goals.
Yeah, I do think they gave up a couple of big chances. Conor Gallagher hit the frame of the goal. Just had a poor touch that took him a bit wide, and that made the chance a lot more difficult. I thought Christian Benteke should have done better with his headed chance. He put that over the top, and you'd expect him to do better. So they weren't perfect, but yeah, you can't argue with two clean sheets. And they ended the championship season, didn't they, by keeping clean sheets? Because if you look at their overall defensive record, I think it was the worst in the top four. So, you know, I think it is going to be very, very important for them to stay compact and keep teams at arm's length. But they're not going to face many teams like Palace, who just have that paucity of options in attack.
What are you doing this week, Crook?
A relatively quiet one this week. I'm at Brighton Everton next Saturday. I'm entertaining you on Tuesday night, so we shall enjoy that.
Okay. And Kevin, what are you doing?
I am on Borussia Dortmund against Hoffenheim on Friday night, so that will be very, very exciting indeed.
I'm quite excited about my trip to the Hawthorns on Wednesday, because Valerian Ismail, going back to long throws into the box, has got Darnell Furlong flinging them into penalty boxes up and down the land. And they've scored so many goals from set pieces already. And they have an EFL Cup game on Wednesday night, live on TalkSport, against...
against Arsenal. And imagine if they were to crash out of that competition as well.
It's a spicy one.
Their only chance of winning a trophy this year.
It's a spicy one. Looking forward to that. Kevin, thank you very much for joining us. Kevin Hatchard, European football expert and all-round Liverpool fan. And Alex Crook, thank you very much to you as well, transfer guru.
Thank you very much. Good fun.
You did the deal on Monday. You're taking me out on Tuesday. By Wednesday, you'll be on the golf course. And then on Thursday, Friday and Saturday...
We'll let the listeners finish that one, shall we?
Right, okay. We're back together on Thursday evening to preview all the weekend's Premier League action, including an absolutely massive game on Saturday night, which is live on TalkSport, between Liverpool and Chelsea. Make sure you rate and review the podcast, and please tell your friends all about us. This is the Game Day Podcast from TalkSport.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18+. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.